Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Georgia. With me is Greg Velasquez in Iowa. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. Thanks for downloading this episode of Scuffed. The U.S. defeated Jamaica 1-0 on an 83rd minute winner from Matthew Hoppe and advanced to the semifinals of the Gold Cup against Qatar. The winner of that game, which is on Thursday, plays in the final on Sunday against the winner of Mexico-Canada. So far, this is a success, right, Greg?
This game was absolutely a success in sort of the process of what this Gold Cup is supposed to be. How's that? Is that qualified enough?
I think so. Yeah, I think. I said that a little tongue in cheek that this tournament has been a success so far. But I mean, we are in the semifinals. We've sort of dragged our way there. And what do you mean this game was a success? I assume there's another shoe to drop with that formulation.
So it's this Gold Cup is process over outcome. And I think, you know, as soon as we heard what the roster was, or even before that one, when Berhalter back in like May was saying, the guys who play in the Nations League are not going to come play in Gold Cup. I'm going to send most of our first choice players to vacation for the summer. That tells you right now, outcome is not the most important priority of this tournament. It's a process, and the process is getting ready for World Cup qualifying, identifying players, getting them reps in the system, and this particular lineup against Jamaica with these players in the system that the first choice team runs was absolutely the correct way, I think, for me, in my opinion, to sort of run this process. I don't think we necessarily got that earlier in the tournament, and you know, we've talked about roster construction quite a bit, but even some player choices in the Haiti game and then the system, the setup, and player choices against Canada were a bit head-scratching, so we kind of didn't have good process decisions there. But this Jamaica game was. So if you're going to nitpick, which we do on this show, the nitpick would be...
A little bit, yeah.
We're a little bit behind on our timeline of experimentation, of process, because it would have been nice if this was the lineup we saw against Canada... and then we got to tweak and evaluate and fine tune so that in the quarterfinal, we got to do, this lineup a little bit better. And then, you know, if all goes well, then in the semifinal, we fine tune again. Because doesn't that feel like what we're going to do now is take this lineup and build off of it, this performance?
Yeah, might see maybe we'll see a different striker starting. Maybe one of the midfielders will be switched out, though I wouldn't bet any money on that.
But you might see little minor changes and like, okay, how do the midfielders rotate? How do they interact? That's a little bit different because of what we saw worked versus Jamaica versus what didn't work. And that's where I feel like we can build off something. I don't feel like this game was building off of the Canada performance. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's like we started fresh. Not started anew, but started fresh with this game.
So this game is like what I wanted to see. It's not that every performance was positive and that all of the information was excellent information. It's that the experiment was set up well for tonight, I think. And so I thought this was a very good way of setting up the team and choosing the right players with, you know, I mean, there might be a couple of quibbles, but those are all, you know, very much at the margins.
Yeah, I mean, my preferred lineup going into this game was that 3-4-3. With Sands in sort of that hybrid center back six position that you talked about last week, but what we got wasn't really too far off from what I wanted. I think like I would have had Legette on the wing and Areola. Well, we got Hoppe in for who I would have played as the right sided center back, Henry Kesslinger. I would have started Williamson over Busio, but it sure seems like that ship has sailed, and I'm definitely not sad about Hoppe playing. I thought he was the, you know, the brightest attacker on the field for us last night, obviously. So
when you're talking about the ship sailing, are you talking about Williamson's ship?
It doesn't seem like he's going to get any minutes in this tournament anymore, does it?
That's what it feels like to me, too. We can get into the lineup here in just a second, but just on the Williamson front, he didn't get into the basically dead rubber against Canada. And then, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this, too. Sebastian Legette was not outstanding by any stretch
No.
in the game against Jamaica last night. And Williamson would you know, probably be a like-for-like replacement there. So if Williamson doesn't get in when Legette's having an off game, and he didn't get in the Canada sort of final group stage game, it is hard to see where you think Berhalter might trust him. It's not impossible, but it just seems like it seems really unlikely that he would start, for example, on Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's do the lineup. Let's do the lineup. The USA came out with Turner in goal and then James Sands and Miles Robinson as the center backs. That was a little surprising to me to put Sands in as a, you know, sort of a traditional center back in a two center back formation, but Berhalter did it and it worked out pretty well, I thought.
Yeah, and his hands might have been a little bit tied there. I mean, Kessler just came into camp a week ago. So he's coming in a little bit behind. He's never been capped for the senior team before, so he'd be throwing a brand new player into a knockout game. I'm assuming that's what you might have been expecting, was Kesslinger to start.
Yes, yeah.
Henry Kessler. So that would have been, you know, a risk, I guess you'd call it, to throw him right in there. So, you know, it makes sense that it's Sands and Miles. We also found out Donovan Pines was not available, so it'd be another risk to run all three of your available center backs out there with no one left on the bench. I mean, you can obviously change formation in a pinch mid-game. But, you know, we're light on center backs. Okay.
Yep.
Rest of the lineup.
So, and then Shaq Moore at right back and Sam Vines at left back. I don't think there are any surprises there. Maybe a tiny bit of a surprise that Cannon didn't get the call. And then it was Busio, Acosta, and Legette in the midfield. We'll have to get into in some detail how they set up and how that setup evolved over the course of the 90 minutes last night. And then it was Areola on the right wing, Matthew Hoppe on the left wing, and Daryl DK up top as a striker. So I guess that...
So those calls felt like quite a few, almost like quite a few coin tosses, right? DK over Zardes. But I'm glad again because I wanted that experiment. I wanted the DK experiment. There's very little experimenting necessary with Jazzy Zardes at this point that you're going to learn something new about him. Areola back from injury after a couple weeks out. He got injured 10 minutes into the very first game against Haiti. And then Hoppy, I think I was glad to see, but like you said, it could have been Legette there and Roldan, as sort of the half space guys. So, just that's how the coin toss has landed in this one.
Yeah. And the, like I said, the only surprises for me were Busio over Williamson and Sands, you know, which like you pointed out is may have been a choice that was forced on Berhalter, but Sands in that two center back formation. Jamaica's lineup was Andre Blake in goal, and then a back line of Alvis Powell, Damian Lowe, Liam Moore, and Kamar Lawrence from right to left. And then I guess it was a 4-4-2. Is that what you saw?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Junior Flemings, Devon Williams, Daniel Johnson, and Blair Turgot across the middle, and then Bobby Reed and Corey Burke in a sort of a two-striker setup. It's no Bailey, no Liam Bailey, no Hector, the championship midfielder. So this was, you know, I think people are saying this was some people were saying this was a really strong Jamaica side. I'm not sure. I mean, I agree with that. I mean, not having Bailey and Hector is a big, you know, makes a big difference. I thought Andre, what's that guy's name? Andre Gray.
Gray. Yep.
He came on, didn't make much impact, which surprised me because he really scared me in the March game against Jamaica. I thought he was awfully good, but he didn't start. So what we had was pretty much an MLS side with a sprinkling of championship and USL players.
Yeah, a couple of USL players, right? And Junior Flemings and Devon Williams.
Yeah, and then
and again, so you're going from. Liam Bailey to Junior Fleming. So you're going from a Champions League caliber winger to a USL championship winger. That's a drop off.
It is. And actually I thought Flemings was one of the brighter players on the night for Jamaica. I thought he played pretty well. But
And Williams actually had a decent showing too in center midfield. So you can take that a couple of different ways, right?
Right. But let's just get it straight. This wasn't this wasn't the best team Jamaica can put out there, and it wasn't it wasn't vastly different from the team we faced in March with our A team.
But but it was a better team than Haiti. These are still good players. And I kind of, I'll go back to that like qualified praise I gave earlier. After the Haiti game, there was a lot of disappointment. And for me, a lot of that disappointment came from player selections. It wasn't necessarily like we should expect to score 5 goals against Haiti. It was, we didn't give ourselves the best chance because of some of the players we used to give our best performance, the best possible performance we could give. But there was just a lot of sort of defense of like, oh, every game in CONCACAF is tough. Like, we shouldn't expect to just run teams over. Haiti's better than you think. And I don't know that that's really true. I don't think Haiti is that great. But I actually think a lot of those Haiti defenses that people are coming out with to defend our performance there actually kind of apply to this Jamaica game, where this Jamaica team is a collection of competent players, some of them playing at a higher level than a lot of the players we had on our team. And we certainly didn't like blow the doors off, but we never looked like we were like total. We didn't look like we were incompetent. So this is like more of the kind of game that I think you can defend that way of like, oh, it was about what you'd expect from a very experimental team playing against a competent Jamaica side. And it's a good result.
Mm-hmm.
The result being like coming out ahead is obviously a good thing.
Yeah. Winning the game. And I thought they were competent. I'll praise Jamaica for like their energy and physicality and the speed with which they closed against us, especially in the early going. Their press caused us a lot of trouble, but they were very forgiving in the final third. I thought we're going to talk about the U.S.'s struggles putting like goal scoring moves together in that final third. I mean, Jamaica, a Jamaica podcast of a similar bent could have exactly the same complaint. Yeah. I think
they didn't wear their finishing boots pretty much in this entire tournament, to be honest. They dominated Costa Rica in the last group stage game, but just missed sitter after sitter. And against the U.S., they didn't create obviously a boatload of sitters, but they did have maybe one or two that they kind of really did not take well.
No, Bobby Reed was particularly guilty, I think. We'll get into that. So let's start with the timeline, unless you have any other preambles.
No, let's go full chronology here.
Okay, first minute, it's just a mess from opening kickoff. 2 blocked passes, 1 each from Sands and Robinson. And a chance for Jamaica 15 seconds in. It falls to Mr. Reed, the aforementioned. And he's offside, so it becomes a moot point. But Turner makes a good save with his right arm to tip it over the crossbar before he knows that Reed is offside. So that's good from Turner. Not great from Sands and Robinson, but I just think the change of intensity, the intensity that Jamaica brought right off the bat, was a surprise to them, and it took kind of everybody a few minutes to recalibrate and get ready for that.
Yeah, that you're being generous. I mean, we shouldn't be able to screw up our tackle football style kickoff. We ran it to perfection against Canada and got a goal within 15 seconds, and here somehow it was a blocked punt, basically, that Jamaica nearly capitalized on. But yes, 15 seconds in, I also was like, man, Matt Turner is going to win us a couple of World Cup qualifiers this fall.
Just because of his pure shot stopping ability.
Yeah, just doesn't make mistakes. It's just very difficult to score on him.
Yeah.
As we're seeing in this tournament.
Yeah. I thought Sands wasn't prepared for that on rushing. I think it was Burke. I can't remember for sure. But he put his head down to hit that long ball, and from the time he put his head down to the time he struck the ball, the defender covered maybe 10 yards and he just wasn't ready for it, you know, and then, but yeah, we can't be starting games off that way.
And that'll be a theme, that speed of closing down that Jamaica showed. That's going to be a theme, I think, throughout this conversation we're going to have, because it is vastly different than what we had in any of the other 3 games we played. And a lot of the criticisms that we were giving to players in those games was not doing enough with the time and space they were afforded against some weaker teams who were not as aggressive. And here it's going to be about sort of the lack of technical ability effect, essentially, to deal with the lack of time and space that they were afforded by Jamaica.
Yeah. We talk about the cage match a lot on this podcast, as you know. And like one way I think about it is like, can you hold on to the ball when you receive it with somebody on your back? And I would say, did anybody pass that test last night?
I don't have a quite. I don't have too many of them. And the other thing I'll say is there were guys who were very happy to try to even get rid of the ball before the cage match could develop.
Yep.
And there was a lot of like really ugly hot potato between both teams where we would just immediately hit it to them. They would immediately hit it into our shins and it would just go back and forth like that. 7-8 straight turnovers. I don't know how you even score keep that if you're one of the Opta guys, but it was a lot of interceptions.
Yep. I thought Acosta was maybe the one guy who was comfortable receiving the ball in a tight space and able to convert that difficult moment into something positive. Everybody else was just back pass city for most of the game.
Yeah, and I'll even be like, he didn't necessarily convert it into something positive. It was almost just like, who could convert it into a moment of like calmness? Who could at least find an area where we could be more composed, even if it never led to anything particularly dangerous? Because there just wasn't a ton of dangerous moments in this game.
No.
Which we'll talk about as we get into our second bullet out of out of several.
Fourth minute. Miles Robinson, who had a very good game defensively, steps past Bobby Reed and carries the ball, 30 yards? And taps it to Vines. Vines and Hoppy retain possession in the corner before Legette whacks a ball into the box, hopefully. So some themes I wanted to identify here with this timeline moment. Robinson looking comfortable with the ball at his feet. More comfortable than he has in the past games in this tournament, I thought. So that's a positive thing. And also, this whacking the ball into the box hopefully was something we did a lot of throughout the night. I haven't seen the data on like how many crosses we hit, but there were a lot, and Legette was hitting them often, not just in the run of play, but he also got all the set pieces, and they were almost uniformly not dangerous. So
this has been a theme all summer. So even in like the Switzerland friendly, I thought there's just too much of this from us, where we stopped playing soccer too early in the sequence and just hit this hopeful ball into the box. And Legette was one who was doing it a lot against Switzerland. In this tournament, like, I'm going to be a little bit critical because, again, we're the nitpicking podcast. But like Shaq Moore just gets the ball, and if he has like time to hit the ball into the box, he's just going to hit the ball into the box. Like, there isn't this sort of like, let's make an actual decision. Let's identify like where we can play. And maybe it's because it's Daryl DK starting up top and you're not looking to hit a ball into his feet and then have runners off of him in these really tight attacking third spaces. But there just has not been a lot of that, right? Like tight, like combination in the box. It's very much just hit the ball in, pinball, see what happens.
Yeah, totally agree. And I'm not, you know, I don't know enough to like identify what we're doing wrong there that we can't do something more constructive in the final third, but we aren't doing anything more constructive for the most part.
It's not even like the Manchester City cutback zone stuff. Like we're just at the edge of the 18, fire a ball in or clip a ball in, stand it up. But it has very much just felt like that hopeful attack. And that, again, that's even coming from the full strength team through Nations League.
Yeah, a lot of hero. We talked about it in Nations League, a lot of hero ball from Reyna and Pulisic, or just hopeful stuff. So moving right along in the timeline, I just thought I noted that Acosta was the guy coming back to pick up the ball. So he was, I think, at least nominally the six. But it did look triple pivot-y in the first half and maybe even more so in the second half. There's a lot of interchange between Acosta, Busio, and Legette. What did you see there?
Something similar. Acosta definitely the designated six. It was his job to be that player right in front of the two center backs who would kind of split out. Moore was getting really high, and Vines would get high on the left flank. And then I thought it was good to see both Busio and Legette coming back to play with Acosta, because, again, when it was Ewell in that spot, it just seemed like everyone would just leave and just everyone would hang out upfield, mm-hmm. and it was on Ewell and the center backs to pick something out. And here I prefer the smaller triangles, so I preferred to see them working together. And then there were some times where Ariel would come into the mix with Moore and Busio on that right side. So I think and it was Legette shaded out to the left with, I thought, less effect. And overall, I think Legette had a pretty rough outing. But yeah, it looked like a Bouzio at the six, and then Acosta at the six, and then Legette and Bouzio coming back to help combine with him quite a bit.
Yeah, I think it was Susaeta pointed out on Twitter that the triangle between those three was actually pretty effective. Like they were well connected with each other, but the triangles between the wing backs or the fullbacks and one of them and the winger never really got a stew going, neither side. Yeah. Okay. A hopeful cross number two in the sixth minute from Legette. This one was actually, I mentioned this one just because it was actually en route to DK at the six. It was just hit too low. It just wasn't executed exactly right. If it would have been 2 feet higher, I mean, maybe we get a goal there. So that's why you do it. That's why you pump the crosses in. Because
if you get everything exactly perfect, you get a low percentage chance at a header.
So tempting. It's so tempting. Seventh minute, Bouzio too timid in the early going for me. He wasn't the only one, but he did commit a good professional foul after a giveaway combining with Hoppy. So I thought Bouzio is an interesting case because there's a lot of emotion wrapped up in this young player in the fan base, positive and negative. I thought so I'm praising him for this good professional foul here, which there would have been a counterattack going the other way, and he didn't even get a yellow for it. So that's great. Bravo for that. He playing a more advanced midfield position as like an eight was not, I think, comfortable. He was not comfortable receiving the ball in the half space and becoming a merchant. Like he can shuttle, he can quickly and efficiently shuttle the ball if he has a lot of room. But if he's got somebody close to him in this game last night, he was giving it away. Like especially in the first half, just. Sort of like not, I don't know if it was the field was bad or what, but the technical ability, which is not something I usually criticize Bouzio for, just didn't seem to be there when the situation was tight.
And this is one of those things that I thought was a theme throughout the night. And I think part of it is, again, that step up in competition. We're still not at a particularly high step with Jamaica, but it's again, you're talking about, professional players playing at a decent professional level. And so it's all about like the subtleties of advantage and what advantage exists and how long an advantage exists for. Like there were plenty of times where we were connecting with that triangle that we liked in the midfield, Acosta, Bouzio, and Legette, where you could see the next pass was there. So it might be Acosta to Bouzio, and then Bouzio might find Areola. But these little technical slip-ups sort of compound from pass to pass, and Jamaica are good enough to, even if they aren't going to take the ball from you, which they did plenty of times, they're good enough that by the time that third mistake happens on a pass, and it could just be it's hit with the wrong weight or it's hit to the wrong side of the guy's body, whatever advantage you'd created with your movement and your first three passes is gone. And so now we have to go back and reset and recirculate. And so that's that technical deficiency that you see kind of creeping in. And maybe the field played a part of it, but it's just the difference between playing friendlies against Trinidad and Tobago's reserves and playing Jamaica in a knockout round. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought Bouzio, like, he couldn't get the ball out from under his feet a couple times when he had and then he would just get wrecked. I thought, come on, buddy. Let's, let's turn and play ball. But there's redemption for him, at least in my eyes. I thought he improved as the game went by. 10th minute, Sands almost loses a foot race for a ball down the, I think it's Fleming's attacking him down the left side, but he got there and he played it out of danger to Acosta. So there's two things here. One, you do see, I think, his physical limitations as a true, center back in a, in a physical battle with a higher level talent, Birmingham Legion talent. But no, I'm not trying to make fun of him. I think you just see that he's not as good of an athlete as a Walker Zimmerman or a Miles Robinson. But he manages to get it done because he's a cage match hero,
So he solves it. He uses some body intelligence to just seal the guy off, right, and connect his pass. And the other bit there is the pass to Acosta that he hits is not an obvious pass, right?
No, a little outside of the boot and kind of like sets us up to go the other way.
Yeah, so quickly. Just, I mean, because he could have sort of not panicked in that situation, but known that he's in a tough spot with this player who is probably, could probably overpower him eventually. And it would have been like, you wouldn't have thought anything of it if he had just won the race to the ball and just like knocked it out of bounds for a throw in, like you see in youth soccer.
Yeah.
And we've seen that from the US too, over the past couple of weeks. But instead, like the composure to control his body and to shape himself to hit a pass to Kellen Acosta, who is looking upfield.
Yep.
And that's no small thing.
Yeah, I agree. A very, very pleasing moment that was for me. 13th minute, a good U.S. counter through Acosta, Busio, Moore, and Areola. I mention it because we connected passes. It was Acosta who turned in our defensive third, plays it to Busio, Busio out to Moore. Busio's very effective at that. He's just good at receiving that ball in space and then finding the next pass. Moore taps it to Areola, and then Areola tries to play a return pass to Moore in the box, and it kind of fizzles out. I think Moore just takes a bad touch on the return pass and kind of takes a shot as he falls down.
Yeah, that shot and Jamaica's early chances on goal looked very similar. Just these really weakly hit, not getting your feet set kind of things. But yes, that sequence stood out for its scarcity, right? We weren't doing a lot of that. So when we did, you're like, oh man, we're buzzing. And then we didn't do it a lot from then on.
Yeah, I noticed one other instance of it. I think it was in the second half. There may have been more, but not a lot. So 14th minute, DK blown up, trying to hold the ball up again. He did not have a great night in terms of like connecting play and bringing his teammates into the attack. I don't know how much of that is like he wasn't getting the ball at his feet enough, but certainly when the ball did come to his feet or in the vicinity of him, he did not make the most of it. I don't know. What's your verdict on DK after tonight, last night?
So mine is that sort of those two things are connected, that he didn't get the ball enough and that he wasn't very effective at linking up play. And I guess what I'd say is some of that is probably DK and his tendencies. Like I don't think he's really looking for the ball to come into his feet. You know, when we would have those little build-up moments between, I think of most of them occurring on the right side. So Busio and Moore and Areola. There might be a window when that ball gets shifted out to Moore or Areola a little bit wider where they could hit a ball into DK's feet right away. Like the window's open for a brief time. We could hit him there and see what sort of the next patterns develop after that. And we wouldn't look for him. And I don't know if it's the guys on the ball not wanting to look for it or whether it's DK not demanding it because that's not really his game. He hasn't played like that much. And this is the kind of information that I'm glad we got in this game was that we either need to improve it or we can't play this way when Daryl DK is our striker because it doesn't connect. Like there was very little connecting.
Yeah. Okay. 16th minute, sustained pressure from the U.S. and a great ball from Hoppy to Shaq. DK runs down a ball in behind, something he seems more comfortable doing, a Robinson ball in the channel, and then takes it to the corner and clips it back to Hoppy. So good work from DK there. And then Hoppy takes a touch and just whips a ball in, kind of like he did to DK against Martinique. And this one is for Shaq Moore on the back post. Just a gorgeous ball. And I don't know that I would have pegged Hoppy for that kind of service from wide. And Shaq can take it first time, I think, on the bounce and have a decent shot on goal, but he gets it wrong, tries to take a touch and then hit it. And his first touch is heavy, and I don't think he even gets a shot off.
Yeah, he scuffed it, and it's tough. But yes, that's a good looking sequence. To create a man alone in the box. That reminded me of like our 2019 style of play, where we were always looking for that fullback as the extra man arriving, and then he would usually try to square it back across for the Zardes tap in.
Yeah, good stuff. And then Flemings in the 19th minute. Gets a chance for Jamaica on a nice diagonal from Devon Williams. So it's the USL connection. He's 1v1 with Shaq and takes a shot through Shaq's legs off the side netting. Also in the 19th minute, Vines and Hoppy get some joy up the left side. Vines takes a touch in the box. It's a little too heavy and it fizzles out. I have too many timeline items. It's very clear.
But I'm on for the next one. What's the next one?
22nd minute, big Hoppy shot after a floated Route 1 long ball from Robinson to DK. DK didn't flick it to Hoppy. but he bothered the center backs enough, sort of in the spirit of Barnsley, that the ball fell kindly for Hoppy, and he absolutely smokes it after letting it bounce once with his left foot. And it's, I think, a pretty good, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think it's a pretty good save from James Blake. I mean, Andre Blake to his right.
Yeah, nice secure save. But again, this is where the value of DK is apparent. Or this is what his, if you're going to use him, like, this becomes where he's most valuable. And we're going to get to Zardes eventually when he comes into the game. But a lot of the things people were saying Zardes was doing that we just weren't getting from DK, I think we basically were getting them from DK. It's just that's all we're getting from him. So disrupting these center backs on this you know, nothing ball in from Legette or Robinson, whoever hit it, that is something. And again, we would see him do that every weekend for Barnsley very effectively. And that is a good chance that is absolutely a Skyball Barnsley situation.
Yeah, so I think somebody said in the Discord, if that shot is like a foot up or a foot down, it's unstoppable for Blake, or very difficult to stop. So, you know, could have easily been 1-0 there. 28th minute, Alvis Powell, the right back, comes off for O'Neill Fisher for Jamaica. I'm not sure exactly what was troubling him, but he was struggling out there physically. 34th minute, DK gets that 1v1 shot from a tight angle. He's sprung by Vines after a scramble in our defensive right corner. Some would argue DK should have slipped it across for Busio, but I don't know. I like DK having a shot there, and it's blocked. But you want him. I think what we want from DK is him with the ball in that situation, even if he's taking a shot from a bad angle.
Yeah, when the ball's on DK's right foot there, I want him shooting that. And I don't think the pass, it wasn't like simple square for a tap-in. No. Busio had been caught by another Jamaica defender, so it would have taken some threading and timing and execution from a lot of players, whereas ball on DK's right foot, smash it. The only thing I wish is that he would have gone for the roof rather than smashing for low, but that's, you know, six of one, half a dozen the other.
Yeah. No, I think he would have had to curl it to Busio, and the pace on the pass would have had to have been absolutely perfect to reach him. But we don't need to get too deep into that. So we already have. Side note, I like the way we closed on Jamaican ball carriers when we were defending. I thought it was very decisive. Everybody was flying into tackles. So Jamaica was doing that, but so were we. Another side note, Legette's set pieces were just uniformly bad. Why wasn't Busio getting those? I mean,
or Acosta.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Just a note on the tackles. Not only were we flying into them, but it definitely felt more like hunting in packs.
Yes.
Which was a criticism I had against Canada, was that, you know, all these duels that people were posting of, you know, whether it was Busio or Legette just being left behind, it was always like they were the only guy in the screen for some reason. And now it was like, one guy shepherds him into the other guy, and they both end up colliding, like crunching. So you're just, you're really, I think, doing a good job of laying traps and smashing people.
Yeah.
Which I love. I love smashing people on defense. I don't care. I want to be a nice, pretty possession team that can do that. But once you don't have the ball, I want the smashing.
Yeah, it was like a trap. It was like a half-court trap a lot of times in basketball, where we would sense that somebody was vulnerable, and then there'd be like two, three guys just converging on him. And we won the ball that way a lot of times. I don't know the numbers.
I'll throw this note out there too, because I don't know where else to stick it. A lot of times when we were doing that, I would almost say that we at times like sacrificed our defensive balance in the way that, you know, the normal rule is you leave a plus one back. So however many guys Jamaica has up the field, we leave that many plus one extra guy. And in this game, something I really thought stood out was we left Miles and Sands 2v2 a lot. Like, it was a lot of times where Acosta as a six was high enough up the field that Jamaica could win it, get it up to the forwards, and it was 2-on-2. And it never really burned us, other than our kickoff.
Yeah, no, it didn't, because Sands and Robinson played so well.
And you might have some... You might have some good 1v1 moments in the timeline where I'm sure you will, because they cleaned up a lot of those situations that never even felt messy. That was what was so cool about it, is, you know, on a chalkboard, you're like, oh man, this is not a good situation to be in. But it never felt like Sands or Miles were exposed in a way that like was going to cost us.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Robinson especially handles those situations without seeming to even break a sweat. And Sands did well too, even when he was pulled out wide to defend on the sideline. Jamaica's causing us some problems at this point of the game. Nothing super dangerous, but there's like a Busio clearance in the box and then an Areola clearance in the box that result in corner kicks. Hoppy, who did well to take the game by the horns several times. I mean, he was the guy who had sort of a spirit of defiance in his body language. So I really appreciate that. And obviously he scored the winner and he had that great ball for Shaq and he had two other really good chances. So, you know, I think he accounted for more, almost 0.9 of the expected goals that the U.S. produced in the game, not even counting that assist. And I don't even know if that counts for XG, but he, you know, he's great, but he gave the ball away a lot. He was really messy. Here's one where he gave it away just outside of zone 14, just taking a few too many touches too many times in a row. And it seems like Jamaica sort of sniffed that out and they realized that they could bury him because he wasn't going to release the ball. Fleming picks it up and slaloms toward the top of the box and just rips a dipping shot far post. I think it was on frame. I mean, what did you think?
Oh yeah, that was on frame. That was a good save. As a goalkeeper, I'm going to say that that is the perfect shot to save because it's from distance. It's not, I don't think he smashed it. Did you think it was like a, it wasn't like ripped?
Maybe not, but it was definitely dipping. It was hit.
So there was some good dip on it. But the key is it's from the perfect distance that Turner has the time to take his step, which is the huge thing for a keeper. So he got to take his little shuffle step to his left, and that lets him get the full power on the extension to dive. So I don't think there was anything particularly difficult about that save. It's just a really good looking technical save that all goalkeepers love to make because it looks really cool.
Yeah, it did look cool. So I was tricked.
Goalkeepers flying through the air. Yeah, it's just a really cool visual. So, but no, I don't, I mean, I think that that was a routine save. It's just a routine save that shows the limits of how far goalkeepers can dive. In a good way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, 41st minute, Busio giveaway at half field. And this is one of those examples of him trying to be a half space merchant as an eight in this setup and just not quite being able to do that. And Kamar Lawrence drives towards the box and then plays it to Bobby Reed's feet inside the penalty marker. I mean, probably at like the 8 yard mark. And Reed just, I don't know, he just side foots a pass right at Turner with his left foot. It was, I think Reed accounted for more than half of the XG for Jamaica, and this was a big part of that because it went down as a shot, but it almost didn't even look like a shot.
He trapped it towards Turner. Yeah. That was a really rough one, and I'm going to point out one thing for Busio here is that after he loses that ball, I didn't think Busio or Legette had a good, like, oh, button where they'd like go into turbo on a giveaway. And when we're playing this 4-3-3, like we need all three center midfielders at times to be those guys who race back to recover to prevent these sort of transition moments. And so, you know, Busio loses the ball and he's just sort of very okay losing it. Like, that didn't work out. I'll just kind of walk back. And Acosta was the only guy who sort of was working back as the six, which is it's his job. And in this one, he didn't do a particularly good job of getting his angles right and his spacing right. So he never came out to close Kamar Lawrence right down. And he also didn't take away the split into Reed into the middle. So he didn't really accomplish anything in his defensive recovery. And I don't know if Miles Robinson was confused expecting him. So what happened was James Sands stepped out to Kamar Lawrence. And Lawrence hits this ball into then the space that Sands left, which is where Bobby Reed found himself. But Miles didn't shift over with Sands when Sands went, and Acosta didn't fill in that space either. So that's how Reed gets that big pocket of space. So that's just a little center back six
eight
mishap, yeah, if you want to call it that, or getting their wires crossed, and no real help from the eights to really work back to get there. Sam Vines, as a left back, it would be asking a lot for him. He's way upfield on the turnover. He was working hard to get back, but there's just little chance of him actually, you know, having the time necessary to do it.
And I do feel like a lot of our opponents over the next 2 years are going to do a lot more to bury that chance than Reed did. That was a good a good opportunity to shoot from very close to the goal.
Yes, we will need to limit those moments, the transition moments generally. Like when Buzio loses it, I wish he would have just wrapped a guy up and brought him to the ground. That's the next step.
I mean, I thought Acosta did do a good job generally in this game of busting things up in transition. So you know, take note.
It's a good one for video review. That one's a good one for the video.
45th minute, we win a corner, and Acosta has one on the volley from the top of the box. If you want to say he didn't hit this one well, I won't hear it. It flashed over the crossbar, but he got all of it, and it was dipping majestically. So then comes the half, and early in the second half, let's just plow right ahead. Our press gets us a legit chance inside the box. It's kind of a tough one, and he skies it with his left foot. On the ensuing corner, I guess it was a corner. Did it get deflected? It falls to DK.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ref called a corner, so we wouldn't have to give a penalty for the guy clipping Legette's foot on the follow through.
I see. Legette seemed to be in pain. Maybe he was CONCACAFing. I don't know.
Also, on that little moment in the press, it was DK scrapping, so it's more Barnsley ball. Like a terrible Jamaica clearance from inside their own box. Like hit it directly into Paul Ariola's head, who was 10 yards away from the guy. And then DK scrapped for the next one. And that's how it stayed alive for Legette's chance. So just another example of like DK was doing the things DK is known to do. And you know, fairly effectively at those things. Just that was all he did. He didn't do any of the other things that we are wondering if it's possible that he can do.
Coming back to the ball, playing in quick combination with his teammates. So
exactly.
So in this ensuing corner, it falls, I think, to Busio, who heads it towards DK, and then DK one touches it to Hoppy, who is just to his left. DK's got his back to the goal at about the penalty marker, and Hoppy takes it on the bounce and hits it straight at Blake. Another really good chance, and you know, probably the cleverest moment of the night from DK.
Yep, perfect execution. Intentionally just kind of juggled it over to Hoppy, yeah. And Hoppy smashes it. So that is a promising moment.
I've been searching for the word juggle to describe that pass all morning, and I could never find it. I couldn't bring it to mind. 49th minute, good ball across from Busio. I think I just point this out because it's like it's more laying it back off for Busio, and then he takes it first time, and hits a good cross. It's a little high for Hoppy, but it just reminds me that why isn't Busio taking the set pieces? I won't keep saying it. Or Acosta. 52nd minute, couple good chances. Hoppy step overs and a cross from the left side is a little too long, and then Moore is bearing down from the right and tries to cut it back. Neither ball connects. 56th minute, another chance for Jamaica. It's a long ball from Blake. Basically, you know, from his 6 yard box, and Corey Burke beats Sands to it and flicks it wide to Flemings, who is unmarked. And now it's Robinson and Acosta having to rush back, and Acosta's on his horse, which I think allows Robinson to commit to Flemings because it's kind of a 2-on-2. And then Robinson makes a good tackle on Flemings. And then Sands kind of comes back to clean it up.
Yeah, and that's like exactly the data we need to see on Miles Robinson. I mean, not that we don't already have a lot of that information from Atlanta United, but that's where you're just like, okay, feeling a lot better about center back depth and where our sort of center back floor is going into September. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm sure we'll get into all that in the wrap up.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, why don't we get into it a little bit right now? Because Robinson had I think one pretty bad pass that for a giveaway in the second half, but otherwise was pretty tidy, and then defensively was excellent. So where's he in your center back depth chart right now?
In the mix. I think we still all have John Brooks as our center back, and then we have I'm basically just saying I'm comfortable with five other players starting beside him.
And
three, I'll say
and
three.
And Robinson's one of them.
Robinson, Richards, probably Zimmerman, and I'm mostly fine with McKenzie, I think, too, but still just want to see him get through a couple of games without the howlers.
Yeah, for sure. So I think I said this earlier, but we're pretty good at rondoing in the middle of the field, and you see a lot of this in the second half. We're stringing passes together, sometimes from side to side, but we just can't penetrate from there. And I wonder, is that just a function of us not having enough 1v1 talent on the field, or something more structural? What do you think?
So it probably is a combination of not having the target striker to play off, but playing in a way that, like, in the backdrop, like, that's supposed to be one of the avenues we have to get in, is to play it up to our target's feet and then have players running off of him to stretch defenses out, create space underneath for that layoff. So he's not necessarily just going to flick on to Hoppy running beyond him, but that's going to drive the defense back, and then he can lay off to Leggett or Buzio, and they have more room now to pick their head up and pick the next diagonal through ball or that killer pass. Mm-hmm. And that just didn't present itself at all in this game, or we didn't create that situation at all. And then I do think there's an element of, like, it's different when it's not Christian Pulisic and Gio Reyna. So when it's Sebastian Leggett and Paul Arriola, like, that's going to be less dangerous. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm telling any stories there.
Yeah, breaking any new ground in terms of insight. I worry that, like, when Reyna and Pulisic are on the field, we tend to rely too much on them there's some evidence that we have tended to rely too much on them to just go at people, and then everybody just kind of waits for them to do something. And when they're not on the field, then we don't have anybody who can do anything. I mean, Hoppy's a slight deviation from that, I think. Maybe more than a slight deviation. He created some stuff, but when are we going to get to the balance where we are, like, where we are, you know, we're setting the team up so that we can put these 1v1 players in a position to do what they do best without it becoming just like, give the ball to Christian and see what he can do. Everybody else stand around.
And my hope is that this Gold Cup is what we're going to accomplish that. So, again, I think we did every once in a while create the right windows, the right pockets for some of these guys. That it's just, once it goes to them, you know, again, it's Paul Arriola in the pocket instead of Gio Reyna, and there's going to be a noticeable difference in quality at that point. The progress is going to be how often we can do it. And in my mind, again, when we talk about the Honduras match, and it was Jackson Ewell in that spot who was doing, we just gave all of that sort of responsibility to him, and he wasn't up for it. The question is going to be, does this new sort of more triple pivot-ish midfield represent an upgrade? And I think the answer will probably be yes. If you're saying when like, is this group right now at the Gold Cup ever going to be capable of just constantly creating danger? The answer is probably no.
Yeah. Yeah.
This group of players throughout the rest of this tournament is not going to suddenly have like a
4xG goal, goal outburst. Yeah. Well, okay.
Which is fine. We're not. We can't expect that necessarily.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sad about that. So 63rd minute, and I'm not sure. You know, some of the favorites that people talk about wishing would be in this roster, like Caden Clark or Cade Cowell. I'm not sure they would change that equation either. I mean, maybe they would, but
I don't. They're not going to lead the whole team to creating that level of ridiculous production, but it would still have been nice to have gotten some information about them individually. That's still going to always be the rub about this particular roster. Yeah. Is that we could have run a couple of more James Sands like experiments and hoped that maybe a guy who we weren't expecting to show us that could have shown us that the way James Sands kind of did.
Speaking of which, Jonathan Lewis still hasn't seen the field since that opening match of the Gold Cup, and Jackson Ewell still. I think he came on late in a couple of those matches, but he still hasn't gotten any major responsibilities. Is it fair to assume that Berhalter has decided to move on from these two players?
I'm going to go ahead and assume that, yes. And I think, you know, one of the positives from this tournament, and it's a little silly that it took this long to accomplish this, is that I think we are moving into, like, at full strength, moving into, like, a cute-proof roster in the parlance of our show, and Berhalter getting cute with his choices. It seems really difficult to even imagine who would be in an extended camp come September that you would consider, like, a cute choice. We're talking, like, I mean, who would it be? I feel like we might have six center backs ahead of Tim Ream at this point, and I feel like he's kind of the last remaining holdout.
I'm not ready to believe that Berhalter agrees we have six center backs ahead of Tim Ream.
Well, I think Ream will be in the September camp because Berhalter adores him, yeah. and I'm fine with that. It's just going to be about who actually takes the field. And it just feels like we're now beyond, like, anyone left who I think I'd consider a cute choice. Some people might think Legette is, but I haven't been of that opinion in a long time. So, I think that is a positive. Again, the nitpick is maybe we could have already been cute proofed a while ago, and we could have just been building up a ton more reps of these guys, of the non cute choices in their positions playing together.
Yeah, that's interesting. You mentioned Legette as a potentially cute choice, because I do think he's getting cuter as a choice.
He just hasn't been as effective, right?
Right. Yeah, we've been
over Nations League and.
Right. We've been big fans. I think we've both been big fans of Legette, not just how good looking he is, but also his soccer ability. And he's not looked good all summer. He's not looked like I expected him to look. And perhaps we can get more into that too. So 63rd minute, Roldan comes on for Areola, who had a very unsuccessful evening. He wasn't bright. He looked like he was coming off an injury. Zardes comes on for DK. And I think I'm not sure that much changed in our setup. Did you think anything changed?
So we noticed this in the Martinique match too. When Roldan and Moore are out there, Roldan flares wide and gets his heels on the chalk on the sideline, less of a half space guy. And Shaq Moore actually comes central and is almost like looking for the ball to go to Roldan, and then Roldan to just like curl one behind the defender for Moore to get onto. And that seemed to be the case again here. Roldan was mostly collecting the ball out wide. So I think there probably is maybe like a better chemistry between those two guys, or just a more effective chemistry and spacing than what we got from Roldan or from Areola and Shaq Moore. But Roldan himself on the ball didn't really do anything amazing. I think he was getting a lot of praise and credit for like changing the game, but there wasn't much that he did. I know he had the assist, but as far as I'm concerned, when you're like evaluating players, assist is kind of like a dirty word. Like, you just got to describe what he actually did on the play. And there wasn't anything particularly special about what he did on that play, on the goal.
Yeah.
We I'll hold off. We'll get to that later.
Okay. Yeah. I too noticed that Roldan was setting up wide and Shaq was working the half space more in possession once Roldan came on. I thought that was interesting. The other thing that I think people are saying happened after those subs is that, or maybe even in the earlier in the second half, is that Busio was dropping deeper in possession and picking up the ball more. And I'm not ready to say that definitely didn't happen at all, but I don't think there was that big of that. Well, there wasn't an obvious change in the way the midfield operated basically from opening kickoff to the end of the game, because they were triple pivoting in the first half. They were triple pivoting in the second half, but not as like the only thing they were doing. I think Acosta was still dropping deep to pick up the ball in the second half.
Yeah. I got to take an incomplete on that one too. So I'll have to like do the full rewatch to see if there was a more pronounced dropping of Busio, or if it was potentially just the shift to Roldan in that space and the way that Roldan and Shaq moved that made it just a more effective, like Busio just being much more effective than he was in the first half.
Or maybe it forced, you know, with Shaq Moore and Roldan sharing that half space and that wing area, it just forced Busio back a little bit. I mean, maybe that happened, and it didn't happen on the left side for Legette. Okay, 66th minute, good sequence, a long ball to Zardes. He scraps for it. Roldan battles for the second ball, and it falls back to Zardes, who who I think takes a touch and just rips one from 20 yards, drawing a good save from Andre Blake. I keep wanting to call him James Blake, the British singer.
Guitarist. Guitarist. So this is another, I don't know, this is another absolute like Barnsley ball sequence, right? I mean, this Zardes shot, and it's Zardes's very first action after coming into the game. And I think that's like kind of led to this sort of sense that Zardes gave us this big boost or an immediate boost, but I don't really think he did. He did the Barnsley stuff that we kind of know he can do too, about like the same way that DK was doing it, but he also didn't do basically anything else in this game. So it's not like he was suddenly like we were connecting through him. So when we talk about who should start in the semifinal, I don't know that there's going to be any difference in what we can execute, whether we go Zardes or DK.
Yeah. I do think like what you're resisting here is this tendency to say, okay, Roldan and Zardes came on, they completely changed the game, and that's why we won the game. I don't think they changed the game very much at all.
that's where I landed too.
In fact, the fact that Moore was more in the half space is the only like noticeable thing that changed for me. And it's possible that there were a bunch of knock-on effects and that helped us control the game because we did control the game more late in the second half. But I think a fair amount of that could be just Jamaica getting tired, you know, because they're pressing hard, especially in the early going of the game, and sort of gradually sagged as the game went on. There's a penalty shout, a bit of a penalty shout, I guess, when Busio plays it to Zardes' feet in the same sequence after Zardes' shot. Not a huge one though. I don't think nobody was screaming about it. And then we had a bit of a dominant stretch, I thought, just probing that right side and pinning Jamaica down with Busio, Acosta, and Legette kind of cleaning up everything that sprayed out from their box. Jamaica was threatening on the counter, but only sort of in name, not in reality.
And this is where it's big, because I think that this is where there were a couple of those 2v2 sequences, and the fact that Jamaica could never even make a 2v2 look dangerous during that time, I think speaks well of what Miles Robinson and James Sands can give us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the big learning, as they say in the business, the big learning from the game for me is Sands and Robinson. But let's finish the timeline off. 74th minute. Jamaica makes some subs. Andre Gray and Shamar Nicholson come on for Burke and Turgot. Burke had put in a shift, but I was worried about Gray. Did I already say this? He looked dangerous for Jamaica against the U.S. in March.
You did. Oh, you did. He was very close to being excellent in the group stage game against Costa Rica because his XG was probably like 2.5. But he was finishing exactly as weakly as Jamaica finished in this game. So he never, I mean, he didn't rack up any goals, but he has the look of a player who could be or should be dangerous.
There was a moment in that March game where he backed Aaron Long up about 15 yards and then turned him and then played one of his domestically teammates into behind for a not a very well finished chance.
But you can definitely say that Gray and Nicholson coming on, in my mind, are probably talent upgrades over Burke and Turgot.
I think so. Yeah, I would have. I assume so. I don't know why they didn't start. Somebody get Whitmore on the line.
I'm really curious about some of these choices too. I don't know if it was because they had a whole week off between games. So yeah, definitely curious.
Maybe somebody got in trouble for doing something behind the behind the bus barn. Let's see. Dangerous ball across from Flemings in the 76th minute. It's missed first time by center back Liam Moore, but he was offside anyway. It's still kind of a nervy moment. 78th minute, a Kamar Lawrence set piece is just missed by Nicholson at the six. I think Zardes got a touch on it as it sailed through, but that was a very dangerous moment. And I got to say, by the 81st minute, I'm starting to feel like the U.S. is just desperate. They're pumping the ball into the box, into the mixer. Acosta has one from 25 yards that doesn't much trouble Blake. The ideas seem a little stale at this point, which I think sort of counters this narrative that the Zardes and Roldan subs made all the difference. I think we were just doing the exact same thing, which was pumping it into the mixer.
That's what it has felt like for a lot of the tournament. Even from the opening game against Haiti, felt like it was exciting, but it was just Shaq Moore slamming the ball into the box from the wide space over right. and over again.
Yeah, he did. He probably hit like 10 crosses that game. And then we get our goal, and it comes on a series of crosses into the box. Starts with an Acosta diagonal to Roldan, a nice pass from Acosta. And he just, Roldan just takes a touch and crosses it from deep. And it's too long. It's recycled to Legette, who was not playing well at this point in the game, and just dinks it off a Jamaica defender. And they're going the other way, but Miles Robinson wins the ball over Gray, which is no small feat. And
hey, Gray was backing into him too. Gray was like undercutting him, and good body control for Miles Robinson to maintain his shape and get a header off to. Did he get it to?
I think he got it to Moore. Yeah, he headed it to Moore, who taps it wide to Roldan.
Nope. Hold on. You're underselling Moore here, because this was actually a really nice feint for Moore. It was Eric Williamson esque. Moore feinted like he was just going to drop the ball back, and Jamaica's best center midfielder Johnson bit hard on that fake, and then Moore just, I mean, walked right past him, walking at the top of the box with the ball in a 2v1 with Roldan.
I missed that completely. Thank you for mentioning it.
It was great. It was a great little moment for Shaq Moore. Probably his best for me in the game.
Huh. And then he taps it wide to Roldan, who lifts it at the back post, and Hoppy rises just beyond the rising Zardes and puts it away. Also rising in the frame of the camera somewhere is Andre Blake. Tell us what you think of Blake's foray out of his goal.
So he kind of went full Zach Steffen here, where he just comes out, and it actually isn't Zach Steffen. Steffen against Honduras had no business coming out, and he came out for that ball that he was never going to get and just abandoned the goal. And Sargent made his goal line clearance. Blake comes here probably correctly and is there to hit the ball, and he just whiffs. Like, his fist is right there, and he just moves his fist in a way that does not intercept the ball. And now we've got the open goal. But so this is why, like, you know, giving Roldan credit for the assist feels a little bit much. I mean, he obviously gets technical credit for the assist, but this is very not much different from any of the other balls that we just kind of hit hopefully into the box. This just happens to be the one that Andre Blake has a absolute howler on. And it's actually two knockout games in a row for Andre Blake against the U.S. where his goalkeeping has been really suspect and probably cost them the game. In the 2019 semifinal, he gave up two really poor rebounds that we finished for tap-ins and knocked Jamaica out that way.
That's right.
So questions around Andre Blake here.
Yeah, I don't know that his job's in danger, really. I mean, but
it's not, but Jamaica's World Cup qualification chances could be in danger if, like, for whatever reason, he just keeps having these. I don't know. I'm calling this one a bit of a howler.
Is it a fully certified howler? Yes. Okay.
I think so. Again, this isn't even like, sometimes keepers just come out and they've got it all wrong, kind of like more of the Steffen camp, and they just kind of flat, but they're nowhere near the ball. Like, he was right there. He had everything where it needed to be, and he just moved his fist into the wrong arc.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of moving his fist more towards Zardes, and, you know, Zardes wasn't going to get to that ball. So Hoppy puts it away. The celebration's on. Hoppy comes off immediately. I think Berhalter had been trying to sub him off for the better part of 5 minutes at that point.
Great moment for Hoppy, though.
Yeah, totally. Joe Akini comes on for him, and then Cannon comes on for Moore. There's another sub from Jamaica in the 86th minute, Tyreek McGee, who I thought was an excellent U-20 player in the, you know, when was the last time we had a U-20 competition where we saw Jamaica? It was the CONCACAF championship before the 2019 World Cup.
So it was like December 2018.
Yeah. I remember it was Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah. Okay, there you go.
And then at this point, we just saw the game out. You know, Robinson and Blake knocked heads on a corner kick, but both were okay. It turned out, and that was the main action in the final minutes. We tried to bleed out the clock, and we did, and we won the game. So,
this is where I'll throw some credit to Roldan and Zardes. They were actually both very effective in totally, you know, cynically killing the game off in the corner at the sidelines. Like, they both did a good job of keeping the ball in Jamaica's attack in our attacking corners, and at worst giving up like throw-ins for Jamaica.
Yeah, throw Legette in there too. He was involved in that.
Okay,
as well.
There we go.
The disc
so that was very professionally done.
The Discord is so hard on Legette, but and he did not have a good game, but he did some nice things. All right, let's wrap this up and kind of get ready for Thursday. What do you take away? What do you take away here? What data are you putting in the bank?
That we're going to have to again figure out how we want to use our forward when it's if DK or Zardes is going to be our forward, because it's going to take some work to make them part of like a nice free flowing positional play, possession offense. It'll take more emphasis on them wanting to be those players. And then it'll take some emphasis on how to actually like, or whether it will even pan out. So that's a big one.
Yeah. We are,
cause we can't run it. We can't run Hoppy there. I mean, it'd be nice to try Hoppy at that spot. Cause he sure seems technical enough that he could be that kind of a player. But then we run out of wingers because I don't think Jonathan Lewis is technically eligible anymore.
He's not a viable option. Yeah. Okay. So we do have to figure out how to use a striker, and for this team at least, it does do something for Josh Sargent's stock, I think, to see the way the strikers have struggled in this tournament. Not all of their own doing. You know, it's a lot of it's on Berhalter, but I watched Sargent's clips over the weekend, and he looks like he can do this stuff. You know, which is kind of what we always thought about him. He can come back and he can combine, even though he's playing on the wing for Werder Bremen. He's doing a little half space merchandising and has to do some of that stuff.
So that was one of the big questions going into the tournament. And so 4 games in, I think we are still searching a little bit for that solution and for how we can get the most out of a DK or Zardes.
We've already talked about Miles Robinson, definitely a big tournament for him. And I'd say he's got to be in the top four at this point, especially with Aaron Long hurt. James Sands, I don't know if he's in the top four for center backs for me, but boy, his versatility is nice, and I would still like to see him as a six. I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but I'd really like to see it because he seems plenty comfortable on the ball. He seems plenty able to play forward passes, and boy, is he alert and intelligent as a defender. So please, Greg Berhalter, try him at the six sometime.
Well, and for me, what Sands is going to do here is make a real good case for just being a fifth center back. And in the extended qualifying window camps, that's no problem. You can call in however many you want. So I imagine we'll always have 5 center backs anyway. And so Sands makes a very good case to be the fifth, even if he's not your surefire favorite fifth center back. So even if maybe someone else is a little bit ahead of him as a pure center back, I think you just carry him as Sands as the fifth center back because of the potential for playing in the three center back setup, or maybe adding a little bit of depth at that holding mid spot.
I mean, surely Berhalter saw, or maybe even instructed him to step forward out of the 3-4-3 and turn it into a 4-3-3, you know?
Oh, 100%. Yep, that diamond, yeah, against Canada.
So he knows, yes, he knows Sands can handle that part of the field and that those responsibilities. Surely it's not a bridge too far to just start him at the six in a 4-3-3. But maybe it is.
Well, can't do it in this tournament because you don't have another center back to
That's
play.
That's true. Yeah, that is another ship that has sailed. Now, so that's, I think, very positive to see for Sands to go from, you know, not even getting call ups to now he's pretty much indispensable, at least in this roster.
in the group, like in the camp, he'll be. I think he'll be in the September camp.
He's got to be. He's too useful. And then Vines and Moore, they didn't have brilliant games last night, and they weren't perfect, but they both defended well, and I think they've both proved that they're credible options at fullback in World Cup qualifiers. Maybe we already knew that going into this tournament, but we still know it.
But we definitely did not know that about Shaq Moore. I think Shaq Moore was basically dismissed as a possibility, you know, especially given the number of options we have seen at right back between Dest, Yedlin, Cannon, Brian Reynolds up and coming, Araujo getting minutes. So, you know, I don't think anyone was like Shaq Moore could wiggle his way into World Cup qualifying windows. And I think now that is a distinct possibility. He hasn't sealed a spot by any means come September, but he would definitely not be a surprise inclusion in a September camp.
No. And I'd take him. I said this last week, and I know you're going to disagree, but I'd take him over Cannon right now.
I don't necessarily disagree. Here's what I don't have a firm opinion on any of these fullbacks other than Serginho Dest. So it's kind of like the John Brooks situation where he's a center back. Pull one of the other names out of a hat. Like, I'm basically there with all of the fullbacks for the other starter opposite of Dest and for who fills out the rest of the roster. Pick one. Doesn't matter to me right now. And I feel like I'm we're in a good place to be able to say that. Not like, one of these guys has to play. I'm like, oh yeah, any of these guys will be fine.
What about Sam Vines? How comfortable do you feel with him in a World Cup qualifier at left back?
Not super comfortable, but I don't feel super comfortable with Robinson, and I don't feel
Anthony,
super
comfortable.
I know
Anthony,
I just said I'd be fine.
Anthony, right?
Right, Anthony Robinson. I'm not super comfortable with Dest on the left and any of the other guys on the right. But I don't think we're going to drop points because of something Sam Vines has done.
Okay. Now moving into the mid
compared to any of the other guys, like as if he's replacing somebody else, I don't think the marginal difference is going to be what costs us points.
Okay. I sense that that's a very carefully lawyered statement, but I don't know exactly how. In the midfield, I'll say I think Acosta has definitely jumped Sebastian Legette. So we always talked about the 4-8 because we thought of it as McKennie, Musa, and Legette as 1-2-3 in the 8 depth chart. I think Acosta has jumped Legette, at least, you know, as of today, as the 3rd 8. So I guess Legette's the 4th 8.
So the 4th 8, and then the question is how open is the competition for that spot? Because again, Williamson not getting looks there. Is Buzio the next competitor? Is it Luca De La Torre? Is it Paxton Pomacall?
I'd love to see De La Torre and Pomacall. I don't think Buzio is. He's not horrible at that role, but it's not his. It doesn't play to his strengths.
He hasn't claimed it, and I don't think that's unfair. And I don't think I think you could say that about a lot of players. Like, you could say if Legette was coming in cold, you would say he also hasn't claimed the 4th 8 spot. But he's not coming in cold. We've seen him play a lot for the national team, and he's had a lot of good performances, and now he's strung together quite a few middling performances. But there is a little bit of like comfort, I'm sure, a ton of comfort with Berhalter for Legette, and even for me, I'm just like, well, he'll be fine. Like if he's on the bench coming into games, or if we rotate him and start a couple of games, surrounded by the other sort of top tier talent we have, Legette will be fine.
Yeah. Okay.
But Acosta. But to your point, I think Acosta becomes more droppable and undroppable out of the 23 at the moment than Legette would be. So if somebody is going to jump, if Pomacall or Williamson or De La Torre do have an amazing showing somewhere, it probably would be Legette who would fall out, and Acosta stays in because of Acosta's second sixedness.
That's true. But I think it's also true, even apart from that, that Acosta is probably better at the. More effective as an 8 right now than Legette, but the fact that he's a second six.
Bob Morocco's gonna make you go to the tape and justify that one.
Well, sorry, Bob, it's not gonna happen. Let's see, on the wings, I guess I'm thinking Hoppy is.
What have we learned about our wings in this tournament?
Well, Hoppy's the only one. I mean, Ariola didn't have a good game. Like I said. Let's just give him a mulligan for this one, coming back from injury, whatever. Hoppy, I think, is, you know, probably within striking distance of Aronson for that 4th 8. I mean, that 4th winger spot. I guess that's how I think of it. I'm not ready to say which one is better at the moment, but I wouldn't have put Hoppy in that category before last night. You know, as like a high energy sub to come on and just like go after some people, which is kind of what we think of as Aronson's role too.
Right. I know. I still want to see a lot of Aaronson, a lot more of Aaronson, and I still need to see a lot more of Hoppy, to be honest, to think of him as like, to even think that that's how he will be used in a full strength setup rather than potentially as an out and out number nine. I really wish we could see him do that in this tournament, is to actually play forward. But again, we're talking about ships that have sailed, and that one definitely seems gone. So that's gonna be a interesting case to follow, is how strongly Aaronson is holding on to that fourth wing spot, or if we think it's Weah that's holding on to the fourth spot. And we don't have to talk about that necessarily now. But
well, Weah's the third winger. You know, it's Pulisic, Reyna, Weah. So? For me.
Same for me. I don't know if that's the case. I know Weah is the one who came in against Mexico, which I think is meaningful. So at least in that game, Weah was chosen over Aaronson, and that's how I would do it too. But I don't know if that was match specific or if it's, if that's sort of the standing.
Cuteness went out the window in the Mexico game. And then, of course, we have just a wide open, it seems, competition for the striker job. DK has not settled any of the concerns that there were about him before this tournament started. That's all I got. You got anything else?
So how are we running out against Qatar Thursday?
If I were Berhalter, I would do the same lineup, except I'd put Williamson on for Busio. I'd give Legette another chance. If he doesn't get it done in the first half, pull him off at halftime. Play Busio.
I run the same 11 back, but I drop Areola.
Yeah, drop Areola too, for sure.
I toss Legette up there. So Legette, you're gonna have to do it as a half space merchant now, which he should be able to. He plays that. He's very versatile. And then it's Williamson. So I want to see Busio, Acosta, and Williamson, with Legette and Hoppy as the nominal wingers. And I want to run DK up top again, see what he can do.
Again, DK
for the data.
Okay, I'm fine with that. Whether it's Roldan or Legette at the right wing doesn't really matter that much to me. So I'd be happy with either of those. All right, thanks for listening. We'll see you.